Continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 37, starting with text number 3. We covered yesterday morning texts 1 and 2. And is Krishna's encounter with the Keshi demon. Text number 3, translation. Seeing the Lord standing before him, Keshi ran toward him in extreme rage, his mouth gaping as if to swallow up the sky. Rushing with furious speed, the unconquerable and unapproachable horse demon tried to strike the lotus-eyed Lord with his two front legs. And later we're going to hear it's maybe his back legs, because padbhyam, with his two legs, so two front legs. Vishwanath Chakravarti writes, seeing Krishna, Keshi, whom others could not approach, Durasadam, what to speak of defeating him, Dharatyaya, charged at Krishna. Durasadaha, unapproachable. Dharatyaya, unconquerable. So he's like a special demon. The unconquerable was conquered. Jiva Goswami writes, Keshi tried to kill Krishna, who had lotus eyes. His eyes, blossoming like lotuses, Krishna glanced at the demon in disrespect. Shukadev criticizes Keshi, since he did not change his evil nature on seeing the young beauty of Krishna. The demon, looking at Krishna, ran towards him. The horse was difficult to grab, Durasadaha, since he moved so quickly. Thus, he was difficult to defeat. Text 4. But the transcendental Lord dodged Keshi's blow and then, with his arms, angrily seized the demon by the legs, whirled him around in the air, and contemptuously threw him the distance of 100 bow lengths. And later it says how many feet that is. 100 bow lengths. Just as Garuda might throw a snake, Krishna then stood there. Vyavastitaha. Vishwanath writes, when Keshi kicked him, Krishna grabbed his extended legs with his hands, twirled him round, and threw him far off, remaining in the same place. And an additional commentary, when Keshi kicked his hind legs, Krishna dodged him, grabbed Keshi's extended leg with his hands, twirled him around, and threw him 600 feet. So, 100 bow lengths. 600 feet. Astonishingly, Krishna did all this while standing in one place, because he's a big guy. Jiva Goswami writes, Krishna avoided his blow, since he is beyond knowledge of the senses, Adhoksajaha, how could Keshi strike him with his hooves? How foolish he was. Having avoided the blow, angry because the demon had spread fear in Vraja, Krishna grabbed the demon's legs in a playful manner, Arusha. He grabbed the demon's legs and threw him at a distance. Keshi fainted. Text 5. Upon regaining consciousness, labdha sangya. Upon regaining consciousness, Keshi angrily got up, opened his mouth wide, and again rushed to attack Lord Krishna. But the Lord just smiled and thrust his left arm into the horse's mouth as easily as one would make a snake enter a hole in the ground. Vishwanath writes, when Keshi regained consciousness, Labdha Sangya, he got up and, opening his mouth, ran at Krishna, but Krishna just laughed, showing his left thumb. Krishna said, quote, do you want to eat something? Here, eat this. Cool, huh? He then thrust his left arm into Keshi's open mouth in order to destroy his life, just as a snake easily enters a hole to kill a mouse. Jiva Goswami writes, the wicked demon, Saha, got up. Or, though thrown at a distance, he, Saha, got up, just as a curious person will put a snake into a mouse hole without fear of mishap. Krishna put his fist in Keshi's mouth, which represented his life air. Text 6. Keshi's teeth immediately fell out when they touched the Supreme Lord's arm, which to the demon felt as hot as molten iron. Within Keshi's body, the Supreme Personality of God, Supreme Personality's arm then expanded greatly, like a diseased stomach swelling because of neglect. And the BBT purport it reads, Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti points out that although Krishna's arm is more tender and cooling than a blue lotus, it felt extremely hot, as if made of lightning bolts. And here we go, Vishwanath's commentary. Quote, how could the arm of Krishna, tender as the stem of a blue lotus, enter the mouth of Keshi filled with fierce teeth? As Prikshit was anxious about this, the verse answers. With the touch of Krishna's arm, all those teeth fell out like objects touched by red-hot iron. Moreover, although Krishna's arm is as soft as the lotus stem, when it touched Keshi, Keshi felt it as hard and hot as a thunderbolt. Just as a jaundiced person perceives sugar candy as bitter, Krishna's arm began to grow within Keshi's mouth, just as Krishna expanded his body in Agasura's mouth. And further commentary from Vishwanath reads, alas, alas! How could Krishna place his arm, tender as the stem of a blue lotus, into the mouth of Keshi, which is filled with fierce teeth? Anticipating such an objection by the disturbed Prikshit, Shukadeva Goswami answers in this verse, paragraph. As Keshi's teeth touched Krishna's arm to chew on it, they, the teeth, became uprooted and fell out, just as if contacting a red-hot iron. Although Krishna's arm is softer and more cooling than a blue lotus, to Keshi it felt hard and hot as a thunderbolt, just as a jaundiced person perceives sugar candy as bitter. Krishna's arm expanded within Keshi's mouth until he died, just as Krishna expanded his body within the mouth of Agasura. And then the final commentary for this morning. This is Jiva Goswami, his teeth completely fell out at their roots. Harivansha says, Dashanayar Mula Nirmuktai. His teeth came out by the roots. The teeth had touched the arm of Krishna, endowed with all powers, Bhagavat. The arm did not change. Just by its touch, the teeth fell out, though the teeth were hard as thunderbolts and huge. Vishnu Purana says, Sita bra vayava iva. The teeth were like thunderbolts. The possessive case is missing in the phrase taptam ayaha sparshaha, the touch of hot iron. Taptam is a modifier and is not to be combined with the compound. The teeth fell out as if touching hot iron. The visarga is optionally emitted in a compound, thus the phrase aya sparshaha or ayaha sparshaha, both are permitted, Sanskrit technicality. The hand of the Lord with unlimited form, mahatmanaha, expanded. The arm expanded in his whole mouth. Though it happened quickly, it was not astonishing. It expanded completely, sam va vrade, blocking the path of air. This was not seen by others since it happened within the horse's body. A partial analogy is given. It was like untreated indigestion. One sees suffering by such diseases. If the stomach suddenly expands within the body, it can cause a person's death. So that's it for this morning. Krishna's enjoying. Could you go upstairs and get that little flash drive that's on the lamp? And I'll read what it says about Keshi's past life. To come in contact with Krishna is great fortune. Yesterday evening there was this discussion about Balaram favoring Duryodhana, and then somebody asked, well, he's the original spiritual master and he's capable of giving prema, so why didn't he give prema? And the Supreme Lord gives his favor no matter what. And he doesn't interfere with free will. He reciprocates with the regard of the living entity. So Duryodhana benefited by Balaram's favor to him. He didn't receive the fullness of what Balaram could give, but he was benefited by the apparent partiality or the kindness that Balaram showed to him. I was thinking, you know, another one of the questions last night was people offending Prabhupada and people in Duryodhana offending Krishna. So how is it that Krishna is, by putting water on the root of the tree or in the stomach, the food goes to all the parts. The kindness that there's video recordings or film recordings of Sally Agarwal describing her encounter with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada didn't preach to Sally Agarwal. She describes whatever subject arose, Prabhupada somehow expertly, comfortable for her also, managed to move the topic to the topics of Krishna. And she felt completely comfortable. She never felt uncomfortable. She developed love for Prabhupada. But it was not like a preachy kind of thing. And there's two other examples. There's a mother of two sons who became devotees without naming their names. They both became devotees. And on two occasions I met the mother. One time I was just on a japa walk in the Brooklyn Promenade. It's a little park that overhangs the Brooklyn Queens Expressway, and from that park you can see the southern tip of Manhattan. You know, you can't throw a stone, it's too far away, but it's very close. So I was having a japa walk, and as I walked by one of the park benches, an elderly lady saw me and stood up, and she introduced herself. I'm the mother of this and one and that one, these two devotees. And, you know, just seeing me, she just became very happy. And then said, he was such a nice man. I mean, she didn't appreciate the transcendentalness. She just appreciated, he's such a nice man. He was so kind. And then another time later, I met her and she said, you know, same thing just came out of her mouth. So seeing something that reminds you of Krishna, like a devotee or whatever, the impression that was in her heart was, he's such a nice man. And you know, Sally Agarwal, so he's such a nice man. But you know, it was an expression of love. And so Prabhupada didn't, as Duryodhana, Balaram didn't try to bring Duryodhana to the position of prema bhakti, because he wouldn't have gone there. But he was just being, you know, he was giving yayatam mam prapadyante, reciprocating. Now, one might, if it was one of us, we might, being sadhakas, say, well, look, he's offensive to devotees, and he's offensive to Krishna. I'm staying away from that person. But we're not in Krishna's Leela either. We're in Sadhana Bhakti stage. So Balaram did what Balaram did to show favor. He showed favor. It's not just he was pretending to show favor because it's part of the script that he has to play for Krishna's pastimes. So there's some opposition between him and Krishna can cleverly figure his way out of that opposition. It's not just, you know, following a script in a drama. It's, he was partial, not imaginary. But it was part of it. Why was he partial? There's different reasons. That was our topic yesterday. Bottom line is, a devotee, what to speak of Balaram, would never do anything other than the pleasure of Krishna. Well, wait a minute, the pleasure of Krishna, but he's offending the devotees and he's offending Krishna, so how is it the pleasure of Krishna? Now, he's on that elevated platform. He's not just like, he reached a high stage. He's the personality of Godhead. And he's engaging in activities with Krishna in a loving manner. And similarly, now back to the Keshi story, He has come for some purpose. there's, like we hear from Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's three external and three internal reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance. And among the external reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance was to establish the Yuga Dharma, to give the chanting of the holy name to the world as the means for achieving perfection in this age of Kali. So he did that. And it's not like because it's external, well, just external, you know, brush it away. Not like that. But there's a deeper understanding that's the internal. And they're simultaneous. Not one in conflict with the other, just simultaneous. So the internal reason for Krishna's pastimes, including killing Keshi, is there's an external and there's an internal. The external is he's come Vinashaya Shaduskritam, and the demigods appealed to him and he promised he would come to protect the demigods, so he's fulfilling his promise. That's an external reason. Or as we're hearing, it's incidental. It's secondary, at least secondary, not primary. And then the primary is loving reciprocation with the residents of Vrindavan. Here comes a danger. Krishna shows his prowess and protects them from danger, while exhibiting his mystic powers, which people can't see, making his fist grow big and his arm becoming red hot, and all of that served a very practical purpose. Prabhupada explained many times the way that you control a horse is the bit in the mouth. So Krishna, knowing that's how he controlled Keshi. I mean, he is the omniscient Supreme Lord, and he's showing his omniscience, he's showing his omnipotence. He's protecting the Vrijvasis, and he's protecting the Devas, and he's engaging in loving exchange that intensifies their shelter-taking and their love for him. That's the internal. That may be not so apparent, but there we are. Let's see if I can find. No. One moment and I'll read the past lives of Keshi, past life. Oh, this one's really interesting. Okay. This is from Brahma Vaivarta Purana, where it describes. One day, at sunrise, three Gandharva brothers went to Chitra Sarovara Lake to gather lotuses for Lord Krishna's worship. They're Krishna Bhaktas. Observing them gathering lotuses, Lord Shiva's servants at once came and bound up the three devotees. The strong servants brought the weak devotees to Lord Shiva. Seeing Lord Shiva, everyone bowed their heads to the ground. Lord Shiva said, "Who are you? You have stolen lotuses from Parvati's lake, where 100,000 yakshas stand guard, so Parvati can fulfill her vow, so that her husband will be fortunate. Every day for 3 months, she offers 1,000 lotuses to Lord Krishna." Hearing Lord Shiva's words, the frightened devotees, their heads humbly bowed and their hands folded, spoke to Lord Shiva. The Gandharvas said, "O Master, we are Gandharvas, the son of Gandhavaha. We offer lotus flowers to Krishna and then drink some water. O Master, we did not know this lake was protected by Parvati. Please take all our lotuses and make our gathering them a success. O Lord Shiva, today we will neither offer lotuses nor will we drink water. But then, why should we not drink water after all? We have offered these lotuses to you. O Master, now we have become purified. Now we are directly offering lotus flowers to the same person we always meditated on, the same person we worshipped with lotus flowers day after day. You are our master. O Lord, please accept these lotus flowers. O infallible one, please fulfill the desire of our hearts by showing us the form of Lord Krishna." After speaking these words, the Gandharvas, the hairs on their bodies erect as they remembered Lord Krishna's transcendental form, respectfully stood before Lord Shiva. Tears in his three eyes as he heard their words and remembered Lord Krishna's transcendental form, Lord Shiva said to the Gandharvas, remember, they want to see the form of the Lord, "I know that you are great devotees of the Lord. You travel here and there to purify the worlds with the dust of your lotus feet. I yearn to see Lord Krishna's devotees. It is very rare that a devotee of Lord Krishna comes to these three worlds. You are very dear to me, to Parvati, and to all the demigods. You, devotees of Lord Krishna, are to me more dear than my own devotees are. However, O unfortunate ones, please hear the promise I made about Parvati's vow, a promise I cannot break. The promise was, during the time of Parvati's vows, whoever takes lotus flowers from this lake will at once take birth as a demon. Of this there is no doubt. However, no real calamity ever happens to the devotees of Lord Krishna. Therefore, after one birth as demons, you will go to the world of Goloka, my sons. O you who yearn to see Lord Krishna's transcendental form with your own eyes, you will see him on earth in the forest of Vrindavan. O best of the devotees, you will see Lord Krishna. Then you will die, mount a splendid transcendental chariot, and go to Lord Krishna's own abode. Because you are so eager to see the form of Lord Krishna, you may now see him." After speaking these words, Lord Shiva allowed them to see Lord Krishna's form. With tear-filled eyes, gazing at that supremely handsome form, they bowed down and then took births as the kings of demons. Their brother, Vasudeva, had already been liberated. Sahotra became the duck demon Bakasura. Sudarshana became Pralambha. And Suparshvaka became the horse demon Keshi. in this way, by the blessings of Lord Shiva, they saw Lord Krishna's transcendental form, were killed by Lord Krishna, and finally went to the Lord's abode. O Brahmana, in this way, I have described to you Lord Krishna's pastime of giving liberation to Bhakakeshi and Pralamba. By hearing this pastime, one attains liberation. Now, Brahmavivarta Purana is not as authoritative as Srimad Bhagavatam, so commonly we hear certain demons from Bhagavatam, certain demons achieved Krishna's abode, and the list is not really long. Commonly we hear they get liberation, the Sayuja kind. But anyway, that's what Brahmavivarta Purana says. Gandharva brothers, worshippers of Lord Krishna, and Gandhavaha was their father. Interesting, huh? So let's see if there's some discussion. Krishna in Vrindavan.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I had a follow-up question from yesterday where the devotee asked a question about the Duryodhan or other souls that were envious or not satisfied by Srila Prabhupada, like displeased by Srila Prabhupada.
Right.
And you explained that they are like leaves fallen from the tree.
Yes.
So how do those leaves get back?
Well, the falling from a tree is like us, you know, living entities that depart from our connection with Krishna. So how they get relieved from that, the fallen leaf position, they're again connected through a devotee and through the gradual, you know, there's the gradual elevation process that comes by nature, at least to come again to a human form. That much is nature's arrangement. And then by good association, one can again be connected. Because it's innate, it didn't go away. So it's a metaphor. Leaves can't be again connected to a tree. Or broken pieces of the body can't be again mended and put back on the body. So those are examples. The finger that's separated from the body, or the leaf that's fallen from the tree. Those are metaphors just to show that the finger isn't getting the nourishment. The finger that's separated from the body isn't getting the nourishment when you put food in the stomach. That was his question. So your question is, how do they again become connected? By sadhu sangha. That's how they again become connected. And different procedures, primarily through sound, but so many other procedures. All right?
Yes, Maharaj. I have one more question. Is it okay?
Sure.
This is with respect to all the demons that we hear, we are hearing about. So when we hear this pastime, what should be our how should we see these demons? Is it they were with respect because they were fortunate to be killed by Krishna?
Yes.
Okay.
But they were demons.
Yes. Yeah, so
they weren't like actors on a stage playing a role because they did an audition and they were approved to be, you know, this demon, that demon. Like, you know, devotees may have a drama on Krishna Janmashtami or something, and somebody's a devotee and somebody's a demon. So those are just script playing. So it's not script playing. They're actually demons.
So when explaining to the kids, like, you know, they become very involved with these stories. So they sometimes get angry kind of with the demons, that why are they coming to hurt Krishna?
Yeah.
So is that like
that's nice.
Okay? Or
if you saw somebody, you know, you're in the temple room and somebody comes in with some weapon and they want to go attack the deities. Is it okay that you object?
Thank you, Maharaj.
There is one question online.
Okay.
From Arjun Biswas Prabhu. Oh, sorry, Anjum Biswas Prabhuji. And he asks, Maharaj, Lord Krishna purified demoniac souls by punishing, and Lord Chaitanya's method is purification of tendencies.
Yeah.
I know about the transformation of Jagai and Madai and then the Chand Kazi. What are other examples of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes where he kills demoniac tendencies?
Well, Prakash Ananda Saraswati, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Now, they were in a philosophical way, offensive and demoniac, but you know, a demon means averse to the personality of Godhead. Naradhama, in the language of Bhagavad Gita, lowest of mankind. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assisted many of them. There's, let's see if I can remember his name, the Brahmana who offended Srivas Thakur, Devananda Pandit, was reciting, and so he contracted leprosy because, and it's a long story. So that's, I guess he wants to hear the story. One time, Srivas was visiting in Navadvip, now Navadvip, it was called a different name at that time, on the other side of the Ganges. And he was passing by an assembly where a celebrated Bhagavat Katha person was speaking. And as he was hearing the verses of the Bhagavatam, he just entered into a stage of ecstasy and fell to the ground and was rolling on the ground. And the guards didn't know what that was, so they threw him out. And he wasn't offended. But Devananda Pandit did nothing. And so the offense went to him, and Lord Chaitanya forgave him. Or the Gopal Chapal, who had offended Haridas Thakur and so forth, and Lord Chaitanya relieved him. So there's others in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. Chand Kazi, who interfered with the Sankirtan movement, and Lord Chaitanya elevated him. That's it?
Yeah, that question is from Atulya Devidasi. She clarified after.
Okay. Okay, question over here.
Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, this is like regarding the mercy.
Okay.
So what I was understanding is like when we have mercy coming, but if we are not open, like we won't be able to receive it.
That's right.
So is it that like how much I am open, that much mercy I am receiving?
Yes.
So how should I be open? Like,
how to become more open? Well, there are things to do and there are things to not do. So one of the things to not do is there are things that are blocking the heart that keeps the heart closed. So recognize what those are. And for example, sin and anartha. Reactions to sin are dismissed by bhakti, so we perform bhakti. But those unwanted things in the heart that are anarthas, they're the results of past offenses, and they're not so easily removed. So what do? We perform sadhana bhakti or bhajana kriya with the understanding that this is the means for me to remove my anarthas, which then makes my heart more open. Anartha nivritti helps make the heart more open. And then on the positive side is try to understand and enter into the spirit of what bhakti really is. But bhakti isn't about us. Bhakti is about Krishna. Krishna bhakti. And meditate on, to make the heart more open, meditate on when you're cooking for Krishna. When you're cleaning Krishna's house. When you're doing, you're doing for Krishna. You exercise the bhakti muscle and it becomes strong. And that makes the heart more open for mercy. Okay. That it? One more?
This question is from Param Gati Dasi Mataji, and she asks, how and when did Subhadra Devi appear in the family of Krishna and Balaram?
There were 8 boys and 1 girl. Krishna was the 8th boy, and she was the 9th child, the girl. There's not a lengthy description, but it's mentioned specifically in the Bhagavatam. She was the younger sister of Krishna and Balaram as the daughter of Vasudeva and Devaki. So sometime, it's not, you know, the chronology, sometime after Krishna was born. Now, whether it was sometime after Krishna returned to Mathura or sometime before Krishna returned to Mathura, but it just mentions in the Bhagavatam. She can look it up. Subhadra, the daughter of Vasudeva and Devaki. That's how it happened. Okay?
This question is from Amara Mataji, and she asks, Hare Krishna Maharaj, the mind sometimes acts like a demon, unfavorably, and then sometimes like a devotee, favorably. In Krishna Lila, we see either there was a devotee or a demon, and Krishna reciprocated accordingly. How does he handle such people who have devotee-like as well as demon-like tendencies?
He treated them very kindly and made opportunities for them to take shelter. So, I'm thinking of Kubja. And there were some parts of her life that were misfortune. She was engaged in the service of Kamsa, that's one. And she had a deformed body, that's another. But she had some desire to do some service for Krishna. So Krishna accepted the service and transformed her. In his Brajalila, there's not too many sadhakas involved. There's devotees and there's demons. But when he left Vrindavan, then he encountered varieties of personalities that weren't quite like that. Let's just take Sandipani Muni. Sandipani Muni was a worshipper of Lord Shiva. One of the reasons that Krishna decided, there's multiple, but one of the reasons that Krishna decided to go to the school of Sandipani Muni is he wasn't a devotee. Now, internally, of course, he's a devotee. In so many ways we can say that. But externally, he was a worshipper of Lord Shiva. To this day, in the place where Sandipani Muni resided, he shows, you know, Lord Shiva Tilak and so forth. But part of the reason was, if Krishna went to take shelter of a Vaishnava to become his teacher, they would have understood that he was the personality of Godhead and how they could be his teacher. So he wanted to go someplace where it was more remote, so it would be off the radar screen of people that were envious about envious of Krishna having killed Kamsa. And, you know, just he purposely went very secretly. They didn't go in, a royal way to go to his, he just went in barefoot, living like little boys, youngsters. So, but in course of Krishna's association with Sandipani Muni, he came to understand Krishna's position and loved Krishna like a devotee. Loved Krishna. Okay.
This one is from Hema Suryavanshi Mataji, and she asks how to pacify ourselves when we are facing some unwanted, unfavorable, and unavoidable situation.
Is there more to that? It? Okay. There's a few kind of standard things, and then there's the reality that we're conditioned souls and we can't follow standard things. But the standard things are, this misfortune is coming my way because of my past activities. I take responsibility for my past activities and the fruit of those past activities that's coming my way just now. So acceptance of the misfortune. And impetus to deepen, cling more strongly, more intensely, more consciously to Krishna's shelter, because that's the place of not just mitigation, but eventually, you know, total dissolution of material miseries. That's my place of shelter. Eternally, and certainly in this circumstance, here comes this misfortune. And the third is, by practicing sadhana bhakti nicely, when there's not this spike of misfortune and the emotions connected to it, you have some strength from nicely performed sadhana bhakti. Purification and spiritual strength both. Next.
This one is from Pooja Shobha Chopra Mataji, and she asks, Hare Krishna, in this dilemma between mind and intellect, according to the Gita, intellect should be higher than the mind and emotions. How do we make our intellect strong? What are the day-to-day practices to do to make our intellect stronger?
Well, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, by studying this sacred conversation. So hear Krishna Katha, either messages from Krishna or about Krishna, with the wish to understand. you're recognizing we won't understand with our material intelligence. We're going to require spiritual intelligence to understand, and that strengthens and purifies intelligence. And when the intelligence is activated like that, the mind becomes more submissive or subordinate, although still it's rebellious. That's it?
This one is from Sudhir Krishna, from Sakhi Sharna, Devidasi Mataji. And she asks, Hare Krishna Maharaj, in this Kali Yuga, how to deal with the demons within?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And if that didn't work, do it again. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.